with trepidation, this is the Help Show. Yes, we've decided to help people. Simple as that. We do get a lot of questions. I get a lot of photography and things like that that come in. And we did get the odd question on Twitter and stuff like, how do I do, and so on. So we thought, why don't we start a Help Show? So here we are. This is the first episode of the Help Show. We're going to talk a little bit about what we're about and that kind of stuff. But we have a panel of... We've got experts. We've got a lot of experts around this network. The first one joining me is... oh, no, hang on.
His name's Sam.
No, it was a joke. I just took a look at the assemble bunch and thought to myself, holy crap, who are we helping tonight? Joining me, I've got... now, you know him from the Gamer Show, but actually, Sam Whiteley, I do believe you're a competent tech.
No.
Oh, okay, my mistake.
Now, that's a lie. And I should sue for slander.
Well, you help people on a daily basis, though, don't you? Because you've got a computer outlet.
Yes.
Excellent. So you'd be great for this. And you're not just the incompetent gamer on the Gamer Show.
No, I am just the incompetent gamer on the Gamer Show.
I've got to say, next to Chiz, mate, that's not a bad title, because he doesn't do anything else, does he? Paul told me he's got a girlfriend, and I just don't believe it. His game is going to go right downhill.
She mostly lives in a small box, though.
Okay.
Paul, would you agree with that?
He has a pump, which he uses to bring her around.
Does she play games? Because otherwise he's going to get no gaming.
No, really doesn't. I don't think she does.
We might have a chance at this year's quiz. Next to Sam, it's Sarah, our Linux girl. How you doing, Mrs.?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
You're here to answer all questions Linux.
Oh, allegedly.
And web as well, because, of course, you're web.
Well, I think there's a few others here that might be able to help me out with that one.
Yes, as well. Which we've managed to mumble through an answer by ourselves at some point. Next to Sarah, we've got Paul Shadwell, who is... This is the day job for you, mate.
Yes, actually, it is.
You didn't sound too sure about that then.
I'm just wondering what my day job is.
Oh, okay.
Supporting SharePoint.
But you do support for the financial sectors, don't you? But enough said.
Lots of other things.
We got Righty. Now, Righty boy, everyone thinks that you're the fool that comes on the big show, but you're not.
What?
You're actually a very, very competent IT bod, aren't you? Who keeps your university running sweet as a nut.
Well, apparently so, yeah. So hopefully I can impart some information, we hope.
And last but by no means least, a bloke who knows a bit, Paul Wheatley.
That's pretty much all I know. I'm the wild card, I think, on this panel. I don't do support for a day job, and I try my best not to help people. So.
Yeah, but you make it so that other people can support it later.
Okay. Let's call it that. I have this from my past. I've run help desks and all that kind of stuff in the past. So, I look forward to this. Should be good fun. We've written some posts which will. I actually wrote them last week, but they've not gone live yet because we're waiting on the first show happening. So we're going to start to do some kind of blogs of just tiny little snippets of support and answering certain. And questions and things like that. So,
I mean, that was
we'll make those live in due course.
That was going to be kind of the first thing to talk about, really, on what the show is about. The idea is that you guys write in with some questions if you've got them, or as well, we have a blog that is oriented to help that gives you some of the stuff that we typically get asked. I get one of the things I get all the time is, "What's the best camera I should buy for my wife or my husband?" You know, something that can go in a top pocket or something, can go in a handbag or something like that. And I'm going to write a post that deals with that. It's kind of frequently asked questions thing as well. If you've got a question, you can send it to us at help@britishtechnetwork.com. Fantastically, Sarah set that email address up about 20 minutes ago.
right, yeah.
Yeah, so help.
Still sorting the routing out, getting there.
help@britishtechnetwork.com, and we'll answer them on the shows. Send them in whenever you like, and we'll do it. I think we're going to do this show every 2 weeks, so that should keep us going. And we'll aim for a Wednesday night, but, you know, work schedules and so on can move it around. We've got people here who are extremely competent as far as things like Windows and web and photography and Linux are concerned. So if you got a question, I'd be pretty sure that based on what we've got here, we could answer that. I mean, we've We've probably got people that could deal quite with in-depth iOS stuff as well as. And if not, we can get one in. Sarah, I'm not talking about you.
I'm glad to hear it.
I tried to get Sarah to come to the London Mac user group this lunchtime when she came for lunch. But
that caused a good laugh, didn't it?
No, she, yeah. So, I mean, let's start off with XP because, I mean, one of the things that we've had through, and we get a lot of questions on Twitter about this, is what do we do now XP's finished? I mean, the first question is going to be, is XP finished as far as support goes? I mean, there's a huge amount of XP out there already, isn't there?
It's a huge amount of the community still running it. Network PCs are... Is it a third of all PCs are still running it, aren't they? It's mainly business.
You're moved off now, though, aren't you, right? In your place, you're up to seven.
We're up to seven on the kind of, on the main kind of admin of the PCs, but we're still, in certain areas, still running 2000 NT 95 in some places because we've got some kit that will only run those operating systems. So it's kind of weird when people are kind of saying, well, you know, XP's end of life. We're kind of supporting Windows 95, and it was end of life a hell of a long time ago. So we are doing a hell of a lot of work to support operating systems that have been end of life for a long time. So it's just interesting because this is so vast. And obviously the operating systems we're supporting that are pre-XP weren't really internet kind of based operating systems. And that's the difference now. What we have now is because the people on XP are probably on the internet, and that's the biggest threat.
I mean, forgive my naivety, I don't use XP at all anymore. I did a long time ago. But, I mean, what's actually stopping is the support for XP, am I correct?
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with XP, and there's no service packs coming out, et cetera, no updates for security. And
hasn't been a service pack for a while.
So... I mean, how many people actually actively looked for updates or actually were even knowledgeable about updates or even actually gave any kind of thought at all to what the case of XP is, look for support on it? I don't think many, certainly domestic users, wouldn't look for support, surely.
No.
Go on, Sam.
No, the vast majority don't at all. In fact, the people asking those kind of questions are now... Well, they've been told by Microsoft that their only choice is to move on to Windows 8, and it's all a bit of a fib. And half of them think that Windows XP is just going to stop working on them as well. So there's a lot of kind of silliness going on.
Yeah, I mean, so to be clear, your computer will run.
Yeah.
The world will not end. Skynet will not take over.
Might do.
Well, okay, that's a different storyline. But what's going to happen is you're not going to get support for Windows XP and you're not going to get security updates anymore. And if you've got an XP system that's running on a piece of machinery and it's the only piece of software that can run that piece of machinery, as some of the things that Paul was describing, your life probably isn't going to change at all, is it?
No.
So
not the slightest.
Let's put it in.
Well, you're going to get these messages on your screen, though. I don't know if that's happening in all cases, but is it not the case that I'm actually sending out sort of pop-up messages on the screen of some users?
You can turn them off.
Yeah.
I was going to say, is there an F-off button?
Well, actually, the ones that I've seen so far have a little tick on them that just says, don't show me this again.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
So it's fairly simple. I managed it.
Did anyone see that picture? I know I retweeted it on Twitter, went around Twitter a week or so ago, of that message popping up on a billboard in the middle of Toronto, in the middle of there's obviously somebody running XP to display a billboard, and in the middle of this advert was the pop-up box saying Windows XP is no longer supported.
That's brilliant.
Superb. We like that.
I guess so. What we're saying is that from the customers, or the users I should say, who have had this message, it's nothing to be worried about. They can, in relative safety, say, don't show me this again, and there's nothing really to worry about.
Well,
I think the thing is with XP is that as long as you follow the basic guidelines and you're not already infected, you're going to be okay. Don't click on links in emails, you know, and you do all the usual careful things. You know, you're going to be okay, at least for a while. The date of that Microsoft set for this was purely the date of the last update. So as of that day, it's fine. Okay, there's going to be exploits that come out and it will slowly get worse. But as of the moment, I should say it's pretty much okay.
Chat room's chiming in here a bit. Toby's saying it's going to get slower and more vulnerable as time goes on.
Yes.
Chris is saying organisation that my team supports still has 70,000 XP users, but they're getting support from you, Chris. enjoy the calls that you're going to get, mate. It's less about support now and far more about security patch, says Toby. And securing Windows XP is relatively straightforward. Just stop using IE. Don't run as an administrator unless you have to, and get a third-party security software suite.
Yeah.
So straight. Yeah. And that was going to be my next question. One of the FAQs, if you like, that we get about XP is, okay, if I'm going to stick with XP, what do I need to do? Have we got a priority checklist of, like, here's what you should buy, here's some recommendations as to where to go, here's some sensible precautions?
I would say that depends on who you're talking to.
Oh, so give us a rundown of your specific user then that you'd be talking to, Sam.
Well, if it's Joe Bloggs, who doesn't really know anything about the computer apart from they can go on Facebook, then to be perfectly honest, I would suggest probably paying for one, not one of the big boys, not like Norton or McAfee or something like that, but something that's going to give them active support. But if you know anything about it at all, if you have a little bit of knowledge, you could probably scrape by on one of the freebies. But it depends on who you are.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're talking about you've got kids in the house and they're prone to internet use, going YouTube, Facebook, the well-known sites, then you might be perfectly fine with AVG or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But if they're starting to get a little bit more, Dad, I typed this in and this symbol came up, what does it mean? You might want to go for something a bit more.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
But the other thing they're saying is it's not just like we're using kind of antivirus and things, it's actually the programs on your computer that you use. The things like Java, your browser, your version of Office and things like that. They're saying that obviously that there are security holes in the actual software that you use. So obviously making sure those are up to date as well as your operating system patches is as important as making sure that Windows XP is, you know, you are Service Pack 3, you've got all the latest updates. Because on the 8th of April, they chucked out a lot of final patch of updates. So it is making sure that you have got all of those updates, making sure automatic updates are turned on and you have got that full suite of updates.
Yeah,
because that will at least buy you some time.
Yeah, agree.
Actually, Microsoft has said that Microsoft Security Essentials, which is their free security app, they're going to continue running that for XP users for another year.
Oh, right. That will help a great deal.
That'd be enormous, yeah.
Exactly. But the first bit of advice kind of thing, there's a bit of software I found is called Secunia. I'll drop it in the chat room. It's a bit of software you can run on your Windows XP machine. It will actually check all the versions of software that you've got on your XP machine and make sure all that software is up to date. And if it isn't up to date, it will actually go out and get the updates for you. So if your browser's out of date or if your Java's out of date or whatever, it will actually make sure that all of your third-party software is up to date as well. So that's a good thing to download. It's a free bit of software. But download that straight away and just make sure that everything is kind of, you know, built in braces.
I'll just try and click on that link. Secunia.com, Secunia.com, /products/consumer/PSI/sys_requirements or REQ.
Yeah, I gave it a run through yesterday and it told my Java's out of date and it wouldn't update my Java for me. And obviously, the Mac users know that Java's a hell of a security hole, because that's why Apple don't package it with OS X. Mm. And those are the things to look at first, because your operating system can be fully up to date, but if the versions of software that you're using, you're using Office 2003 and things like that, then obviously that's the first hole to patch, because you can do all you want with doing service pack updates, but if you've got a bit of software that's got a hole in it, that kind of negates the risk, really. So it's worth downloading and giving it a go anyway.
Yeah, Secunia.com. I'm just trying to get a picture up here of it. There's the website. Secunia, stay secure, and there's a whole pile of stuff going on there. Anyone got any top recommendations at this end? Right, you know, if you're going to stick with XP, you've got to do the following things. So we're talking about an antivirus system, preferably something that's monitored if you're a higher risk user, says Sam. AVG, if you're just talking about cruising Facebook and YouTube. Anything else that would be good to keep tuned up? Well, the other thing that I was thinking about is speed with XP. Is it going to get slower as an OS as programs increase in their demand?
Yes. Full stop, yeah.
I would say thanks, Sam.
I think that's the very nature of technology, the way it moves on, and applications need more resources. And
so is there any
less people are going to support XP?
Is there anything that people should be looking at to help speed up the computer? I mean, you know, I use a program called Clean My Mac from Macport, and it's fantastic. It just gets rid of a lot of the cached files, a lot of the temp stuff. Cleans the memory out, deletes all the files I haven't used for a long period of time if I want to. And it's useful to run that periodically to keep the system in
tip-top
shape.
You could do things like that. I think the critical aspect is to say stay safe. And as Paul said, I think one of the key things is don't use IE unless you have to, and don't run as an administrator. And if you are running a default setup, then set up another account that's not an administrator and only use that account most of the time, and only use the administrator account when you actually need to install software, which shouldn't be very often.
Well, I've got to say, I'm guilty as anyone else, you know, even on my Macs. I run as the admin, and then if I set anyone else up, so my wife's computer, I'm the admin, but she set up as just a general user. Ellis is set up as a general user on his system. But I just run as an admin full stop.
But the thing is, one of the things that Linux is really good at is that it only lets you run as when you have to do something that you where you need that permission, you actually have to specifically ask for it. Windows 7 is better at it, but even so, it you can set it up so that you just have to say yeah, okay, and people will actually do that out of habit. It is better now, even if you are the administrator, for the day-to-day use on that machine, to not run as an administrator for safety reasons.
Yeah, but there is the fact that XP doesn't use the user access control that Vista and Windows 7 and Windows 8 run. The one good thing, is obviously, you've got user access control in Mac as well. You have to put a password in to install anything. And from Windows Vista onwards, you have to approve anything that has to run. XP doesn't actually have that. So
if you're logged on, if you're the logged on administrator, that is it. As soon as you click OK, it's done.
Exactly, and Vista onwards will actually say, do you want this to run? So it won't actually run without you giving it permission. So XP is even more vulnerable than even Vista, and that's a dirty word anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't swear at us. It's like saying Windows ME.
So yeah, you really got to be aware of what is actually running in your PC. But talking about kind of things like cleaning it up and that, there are things like CCleaner, a thing called the PC Decrapifier. And when I say that, IT techs go, the what? And you go, the PC Decrapifier. And if you go to PCDecrapifier.com, it's actually a little free utility that you run, and it will actually scan all your PC for startup files and all that sort of thing, and it will actually give you a list of everything that's installed, even things that's half installed or things that didn't uninstall properly, and it'll actually let you run in sequence full uninstalls. So it's worth running to make sure that your PC isn't running anything that you really weren't aware that it was running. So worth giving a go.
Sam, you've put a couple of links in there in the chat room. Crap Cleaner is the first one that's not called Crap Cleaner anymore because no one can say it. I mean, is that a hearty record? I didn't even know they did it for Mac, I have to say.
It's a grand little tool. It's really useful. Just goes through and kind of cleans out everything. And then the second one I popped in was Malwarebytes, which is just another kind of good little cleaner, goes through looking for malware and other little bits and pieces. Cracking as a kind of secondary tool. It's got no preventative measures in it, really. It's just a scanner, but great tools for anyone to use.
I mean, the one thing that I'm always suspicious of with free stuff is how effective the free is, whether it actually does the job or whether it's just a drug sell to get me to go and get the big swing.
I think a lot of that is also where you get it from, Ewan, in terms of being careful that you're not downloading a copy of a particular tool if it's not come from Microsoft or wherever, and Microsoft.com to make sure that somebody hasn't loaded it up with something nasty, which is always a risk.
We're trusting Sam to not have posted some links here which are dubious.
No.
I mean, I may be taking that at face value, but Wheatley's is conspicuously quiet here.
No.
Well, you know, it's been a long time for an XP. When I get the Mac questions, I'm right on in there, but...
Good lad.
No. Malware bytes is the first thing we run when we get an infected PC. That is
really
your first go-to kind of... It's worth everyone on XP running malware bytes. It really is the best bit of software you can run.
And that's the free
just
version.
Just to make sure you're safe.
That's the free version.
My personal view is that if you once a computer's infected, forget it.
I think
zap it and start again, reinstall the operating system from a known good source. Because you just never know. I wouldn't trust any piece of software that would actually say it can get rid of or find stuff. Because you just don't know whether it will or not.
Well, no, the only real safe way, if you're trusting software, is really go to the registry level and remove all the keys and everything yourself, which we end up doing sometimes. But I work for an organisation where if a machine is infected, our policy is it will be wiped. We actually block the network point that is linked to, and we quarantine the MAC address. So we are very serious about malware. Obviously, we've got rid of XP now, but in an XP world, you really want to be making sure that you are safe. And malware bytes, yes, it isn't the best thing to, you know, you may not guarantee it, but you may want to just give it a scan to make sure that you are as safe as you can be.
It does bring
up a lot of things you may have not realised.
Yeah, I don't think it does any harm to use it, but I still would, even in a non-commercial environment, I would still zap it and start again.
Sam, chime in there.
It depends. It depends what it's picking up, to be honest. I mean, if it's picking up just little bits and pieces, like a couple of minor things, then, yeah, it's fine to run it and clean it off. But if it's coming back and reporting 50-odd things, then, yeah, you know it's time to wipe and reinstall. But for the average home user, and I have some Silver Surfers who are customers of mine, and... frankly, they seem to be able to pick up stuff like every other week, and they can't be wiping and reinstalling the computer every other week, mainly because they don't know how to. But it'd just be a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Once there's a big nasty in there, you are better to wipe and reinstall, but it's always practical.
That well-known malware professional phrase, a big nasty, has been discovered.
Mm. Yeah. It's better what I usually call them. So
the chat room's gone off on one. They're saying, I've got a new kit from Orbit, says Street. I don't know how you do that, but that's okay.
One of the things, Ewan, is that... if you want to reinstall Windows XP, the last service pack was on April 21st, 2008, was when it was released, 5 years ago. So you have to install XP, jeez, Service Pack 3, and then 5 years worth of updates.
Yeah. There are 167 extra updates after Service Pack 3.
Yeah, I know.
I've sat through them all. It's just painful. And the other problem that you get if you're reinstalling XP is because it installs, if you've got an old version, it will actually install with IE6, and it won't actually contact the Windows Update Server. So there is actually a program called Auto Patcher, which you can actually download, which is an update engine. It will actually go online. You install it. I think I'll find the link. But it'll actually go and get all the updates manually for you, and so you can actually get all your updates in one go. But if you actually reinstall XP with an original disk, you can't actually contact the Windows Update Server. So Auto Patcher is a really good tool just to get yourself back up to date.
I know
this is not the kind of thing that your average person's going to do, but what I use for the people I support is you get an original disk, you load that onto PC, use a piece of software called Nlyte, which enables you to slipstream, create a slipstream disk with all the Windows updates, which you can download so that when you go to install it, it actually builds it with all those already included.
Cool.
I cheat.
And that, once you get those installed, and once you're up to where you need to be, take an image of it, you never ever have to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like creating Service Pack 4, effectively, or Service Pack 5, but you're doing it yourself. Yeah. And obviously, we've now reached an endpoint. You can do that and create a definitive XP disk.
So going back to the Silver Surfers that Sam raised there, if these people are looking to say, right, okay, I know it's come to the end, I'm not cruising a whole shed load of porn sites and that kind of stuff, but I want a bit of peace of mind. I don't want to worry about where I'm going online. Is there an upgrade path that you could say? Is there a minimum spec that you suggest that they have, or is there an upgrade to the computer that you would suggest they have, or is it just a case of, you know, stick where you are?
I think most people who are probably on XP now are probably on the old kind of Pentium 4s or Core 2 Duos now. So I think the minimum upgrade path is a Core i3 at least now.
Yeah.
Because obviously you need at least some sort of 64-bit compatibility with Windows 7 if that's where you're going to go. But I know that Microsoft are kind of talking about upgrade to Windows 8 and they've got a tool for it, but a lot of people who are on Windows XP, it's never going to be compatible with Windows 8.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not at all. And to be honest, a lot of the people that are still running Windows XP aren't compatible with Windows 8. A lot of people are really scared. Just because it looks different.
Is there a 32-bit Windows 8 or is it 64-bit only?
I've never even looked.
Exactly. I know with Windows 7 it was 32 and 64-bit. I think Windows 8 is 64 only.
Only, yeah. It didn't surprise me.
Yeah. So there's no chance that their hardware is going to be compatible. So Windows 7 is going to be your only chance. But then what are your chances of getting Windows 7? Not very likely either. But Windows 7 is the best jump that people have got getting used to the new, the jump from Windows XP to Windows 7 is less harsh than to XP to 8.
Actually, if anyone's looking, if you go online and if you look for Windows 8 Pro, that comes, you can freely downgrade from Windows 8 Pro to Windows 7 Pro. So it's like a little loophole. Most of them actually come pre-installed with Windows 7 Windows 8. Because they're designed for businesses, and quite frankly, most businesses don't want to move on to Windows 8.
No. Yeah. As a business, we've completely ignored Windows 8. Even the Vista days, we had an XP downgrade disk. And that's always been the way in business. So I think if people can get onto Windows 7, that's a lot more of an easy jump to make than to Windows 8. Because Windows 8, even with people who are buying laptops in my organization, they hate it. They really hate it, you know. We're installing Classic Shell and booting to desktop just to make sure that they get some sort of consistent experience. XP, people have been using XP for, I don't know, the last 13 years to Windows 8. That is a hell of a jump to make people to ask people to do.
Totally agree.
Chat room are going off on. The rich folk in the chat room are saying, why bother? Just get a Mac. Thank you for that superlative advice. And Streak says, I've got a Commodore 64, never had malware on that. Well, thank you for that pearl of wisdom,
Streak. Can I just say something about the Mac idea? The only thing I would say is that whatever computer, whatever technology you use, you're always going to be in this situation at some point, because Apple, quite rightly, are going to turn around and say, we're no longer going to support OS, whatever the version is at some point, and you're going to be faced with having this same predicament of how do I make this work and limp on continuing to use it with the same hardware, or like you're saying, throw it away and buy a new Mac. So it equally applies whatever the hardware is.
Sorry, I talked over the top of you there, Sarah.
Oh, I could hear you exploding in rage there, Paul.
No, because I agree in principle, but the thing is, the difference with the Mac is you get far more people upgrading. Because it's far cheaper and it's far easier to upgrade with a Mac.
It's free.
In principle, you're right. Eventually, there will be an end of life with a MacBook and things like that. But if it's only kind of 25, in fact, it was free the last upgrade. a lot more people do upgrade Macs than upgrade Windows. I mean, it's ridiculous when you look at the two charts kind of side by side, Windows versus Mac in upgrades.
I agree, Paul, but the point is that a piece of hardware is going to get to a point where Apple are going to say, no, we're not going to upgrade that to the latest version of OS X.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Apple user is going to find themselves in the same boat.
Yeah. Well, we had that problem when they removed Rosetta from 10.7, didn't we? It was just kind of like, it's gone. All that software will not work anymore.
Yeah, they've done it with the iPad.
That attitude I kind of commend in a way. It's kind of like, we don't support it, get on with it. But there's a video online on YouTube, I think. It's a chap, he upgrades from Windows 1, and I think he gets all the way to Windows 7, and all his software's compatible. And Microsoft always had to have that fight of making sure everything's compatible through the years, you know. And it's come back to bite them in a way.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing they've always had to do because of the fact that they've had the largest share of the audience, and more people will more like to say, no, I'm going to go away from Windows unless that Microsoft continue to support my older versions.
Okay. So Paul, you were about to speak.
Yeah, actually, I've got a practical example of somebody using old hardware. I bought a computer for my mum, I guess, 10 years ago, and I can't remember what was running on it, maybe Windows 95. And it was fine to start with, but gradually as it got older and she dropped it a couple of times, it's quite a heavy machine. She was using it purely for checking her email, surfing the internet and Skyping to my sister in New Zealand. And when the iPad 2 came out, I said, you should try one of these because I think this would actually solve your problem. And I got one for her, and she tried it, fell in love with it, and that's now all she uses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mum's the same. She had an old, I don't even remember what it was. I think it was a G5 Mac Pro she was using, and she's moved on to an iPad 2 and hasn't even looked back. So I guess there's probably an argument there is that a lot of users could move on to tablets, be that Surface.
Yeah.
Be that Android or iOS. There's, I think, Sam, you mentioned before kind of the users that are just interested in email and the sort of silver surfers who may deal with a bit of Skype and things like that as well. And an iPad or an Android device or a Surface tablet is probably everything they need, or even a Kindle tablet.
I agree. That's a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Spoke over the top there. Sorry. Crack on.
Yeah, but for the price of a Windows 8 license, you can go and buy a Chromebook, which is basically what a lot of people who are on XP are probably just doing, surfing the web, checking their emails, going on Facebook, doing Twitter. For the price of the actual Windows 8 license, you could buy a whole new computer that's being updated all the time.
Well, as of last week, any Windows device that is under 9 inches, Windows is free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
there we go.
No one else can hear me because I've got mute on. I've been saying loads of interesting stuff right there, but no one. I just thought you bastards were ignoring me.
You gesticulating.
It's par for the course, admittedly. But are there alternatives? Pete in the chat room saying, why not go for an iPad? We've talked about iPad there. What about another OS? So going for Chrome or for Linux? Sarah, any thoughts?
Well, certainly Linux is an option. One of the things I was actually going to suggest, which is what I think Paul touched on, was the idea of if you've got someone that is just going to use it for surfing, is to stick to going for a tablet. Why not? I think it's
cracking.
It's a perfect solution. That's exactly what I've done with a friend of mine. That's why I had you remember that episode of The Big Show where, you know, I was showing an iPad and you were like, no, you bought an iPad. Well, that's exactly why, because that's all she wanted to do was to surf the net and do email and stuff. So it's perfect use for it. So why not? I think for most people these days that will do, and you'd be amazed at the things you can do with it. I've still got a few things that, apart from work-related things, that I do still need a computer for, but I increasingly find myself using my tablet for more and more things.
And if you like the idea of a hardware keyboard, if that's something that's kind of putting you off,
There's lots of different options. So, like, there's a transformer for Android. Is a kind of clicks in to be like a kind of clamshell laptop. Bluetooth keyboards all over the place for iOS. In fact, for everything, Bluetooth keyboards. Some models of Surface you can actually plug a mouse and keyboard into it and USB as well.
Some of the stuff from
I found is absolutely brilliant. I don't use it very often. I mainly used to use it when I was taking doing show notes for the F1 show. But it's perfect. Bluetooth does the job perfectly.
There's an awful lot of stuff out there, and one of the best sources for Bluetooth keyboards for the super tiny ones or the super cheap ones is Maplin. It's actually really good. And a lot of the stuff there is they're rechargeable off a USB or micro USB or something, and you're laughing. Good conversation, that. I mean, if you've got any questions about XP, we'll come back to it next week if we really need to. Send them in to us, help@britishtechnetwork.com. And we'll have a go at answering them for you. Hopefully we sparked a bit of a thought process there that will help you sort yourself out. I know we've got a few people.
I think the important thing, the message to say at this point, is don't panic if you've still got XP. Mm.
Take some sensible precautions.
Now, yes, it's going to get worse and things will slow down and you'll get less support. But just because Microsoft have scaremongering everybody, and the one thing that really annoys me, without getting on my soapbox too much about this, is there are big organisations that are paying Microsoft to continue support. My view is, why, if they're continuing to support them, why can't they support the rest of us?
Because we're not paying for it.
Yeah, I know, but that's the whole point.
They want us to upgrade.
To be fair, it's been being out done. Like, almost, what is it, 13 years? Who supports products for that amount of time? Not many people.
I think they've done a good job, yeah.
On your car and stuff like that, you don't get a warranty longer than 10 years. I'm not a big Microsoft person, but I don't think you should bash them for dropping something after that amount of time.
I agree. I totally agree with that.
I agree. All I'm saying is the fact that they are doing the support because of the fact that there are organizations that are paying them to do it.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, if they'd said, no, right, that's it, I don't care who you are, we're stopping support, fair enough. But the fact that it's still being done, I don't understand why they can't release it.
But I guess, using Sam's car example, if your car goes out of warranty, you can, as a person, pay to have the warranty extended. But, you know, if Sam was to pay to get his warranty extended and I had the exact same car, I wouldn't get it for free as well, because he's paid.
No, I don't agree with giving it to free for everyone else. I think that's...
I can't get anybody to service my penny farthing.
I like kit to last for as long as possible. And I hate being told, dictated to, by manufacturers that I've got to update because they want to sell me the latest piece of kit.
I entirely agree with that.
Sarah, you're talking to a man who has a Canon 6D, and when he bought it, thought, this is great, I've got Adobe 5, Photoshop 5, I've got my Canon 6D, and Adobe decided not to support Camera Raw from the 6D unless you went up to Adobe 6. And I was like, well, this is 18 months old for me, and you're not supporting the new RAW system? Tough. So now I do just push everything to DNG because I'm not going to be bent over by Adobe. There's always rays around it. So
that's exactly my point, is that's exactly why I object to it.
Moving on, we've got a few clips. Go on.
Sorry.
Go on, Paul. Just finish off there.
Just one last thing. I miffed that the BBC still don't support the BBC computer.
Is it a Model B, though?
Yes, it was a Model B.
Yeah, see, the Model B is a piece of crap.
To be fair, I remember that from primary school. I think we had those in primary school, I think.
I remember that from my first job, you cheeky bastard.
Sam's younger than me. He probably was in, like, preschool or something.
I once saw one in the museum.
Without getting too deep, we've got a question in from Paul. What's the latest on Heartbleed? Should I reset my password yet, or just hide under the bed like the Daily Mail says I should? Daily Mail all the way, absolutely. I don't want to get too technical on this, but from what I mean, you still got to check whether they've updated their certificate, because that's the key part, isn't it? If they're running OpenSSL, then they have to have updated their certificate. Now, would there be any sites out there that are running OpenSSL that haven't got the memo on this and haven't done it?
There will be, definitely. But I think, in the main, your day-to-day sites that you would probably be most concerned about, the flaw, are going to be patched. And I'm probably going to list something here they openly said that they were not affected by, but your Googles, your Amazons, your Facebooks, and things like that, you're safe for them. Banks generally were not affected by this because they didn't use that protocol. That's not across the board, but it's in the main. I think one thing that should be taken away from this, if you want to, is to get yourself a password a password vault. Certainly with LastPass, they actually list all the services that you're safe to go and change. Yeah. So if you've got passwords for a variety of different places, it will actually list you and say, these guys have updated their security certificate, you should go away and change this password now. And it's also $12 a year, so it's like a dollar a month, which is 60 pence a month or something like that.
Stupidly
I think you should look into something like that. But in the main, I think you're safe.
Yeah, go change your passwords, but maybe a check. I think the only thing that bothered me was I've only had two companies proactively contact me over Heartbleed. No one else has bothered. Okay, I'm well aware that a lot of companies maybe don't use OpenSSL, so it doesn't affect them, but I've got to say, I expected more of a proactive response, particularly after it leaked out into the mainstream media. And the mainstream media was getting it horrifically wrong with what to do.
The
Daily Mail.
Because my local radio station, in fact, it was maybe Thursday. It was like the day after it had broken and not everybody had fixed it yet. And my local radio station announced to people that the flaw had been fixed and go and change your passwords right now. No, not yet.
Yeah. That is, it's crazy, isn't it? Just people not doing the research properly. But
bit more to it.
I agree with Ewan, actually. I do think that a lot of the big organizations should have let us know, even if they were on Microsoft platforms and weren't affected, it still would actually give that element of reassurance to people that they knew they were safe. Yeah, you want to know one or the
other. A question from Joshua. I want to record my Minecraft games and have my face from my webcam so that people can see me making it while I play. I then want to upload them to YouTube. Is there a free way to do this?
I had something in my head there, but a freeway is a...
Yeah, the word free completely screwed it up entirely.
Throwing me a bit of a curveball there.
We struggled on that one a little bit.
Yeah, you've been trying to record your face on other footage, haven't you, Sam?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, the suggestion I would give is Screencast, I think, is probably the cheapest one I know of. There's a couple of other ones.
Camtasia as well.
Camtasia's fantastic.
I'm not sure about the webcam part, though. Camtasia, my daughter uses that actually for Minecraft to upload to YouTube, but I don't think she has a sort of a picture-in-picture type thing. It's maybe available, but I don't know if it does it or not.
Well, I'm talking to... I've got something tomorrow. I'm looking at something absolutely fantastic from TechSmith, which I can't tell you about because it's embargoed. But watch this space. I'll let you know when I get the go-ahead. But
picture-in-picture can be achieved by Camtasia. So just a quick Google.
Camtasia's fantastic.
Camtasia does allow you to do picture-in-picture with a webcam and your actual screen recording, it would look like. If you just do a Google search for... Camtasia, picture in picture to get the webcam thing. That isn't free, though. I think TechSmith is about 50 quid or something like that.
Yeah, it's not huge. Relatively reasonable. CamX that I recommended to Paul for camera switching, that lets you do a picture in picture as well from two different sources, as long as they're using different drivers. So, but I can't think of anything. The only other thing might... No, that wouldn't work.
Camtasia's 200.
I was trying to think if you could do like a windowed mirroring or something off OS 10, but from another computer. But that's all I can think about.
Oh, you know what you could do?
Go on.
I'm just thinking, you could do a screen capture on Skype of a second little window, kind of down the bottom right. So you know if your phone.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, like your own review. Yeah, I got you. So you Skype and you show your own screen and then, there you go. That would work, perhaps. But you still have to have a screen.
You still have to have a second screen.
Well, you'd have to have a screen capture.
That would achieve it. It's not very elegant, but it would achieve it.
No.
And actually, I think, doesn't QuickTime have a recording screen recordings service or solution?
Is that only the pro version you've got to buy? Or is the pro still available or not?
No, I think it's in version 10.
We'll have a look. We'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Other questions. What flavor of Linux is the right one for me if I want to use it to replace XP? Sarah, you're the woman for this one, I think.
Yeah, I don't think we really sort of touched on the fact that Linux is a viable alternative, but traditionally, the Linux started out as a flavor of as a version of a derivative of Unix operating system, which has been around for a lot longer than Windows. And when Linux came along, it started to sort of split out into different what we call distributions. And the idea is that it's, you know, there's lots of different versions out there, and it just, a lot of it depends on which ones you like. But there's one particular one which is a company called Canonical have put a lot of effort into developing more into a more mainstream Linux platform with a GUI front end on it called Ubuntu. And, you know, I think it's been good and bad at times. I've just been looking at the latest version, which is still in beta at the moment, 14.04. And it is quite good. I think if you are looking at a Linux distro to start with, Ubuntu, I'd probably recommend, is probably the best one to start with. However, the one I use is called Linux Mint. And I think it is the closest one I find to what I'd say is a traditional Windows environment, particularly the Cinnamon version. But the basic idea is that you download, or you can get on a disk if you buy a magazine. Sometimes they come with you know, various Linux magazines. I don't know if any other types of magazines do that, but you take the disk, or you download the what's called the ISO file. You use a piece of software to put it onto a DVD, and then you can boot that. You can try the operating system and then decide if you want to use it. And the good thing about it is that normally the requirements of the operating system flavor that you're using in Linux normally isn't as much. So you can actually get a great deal, you know, it's a good way of actually making good use of old hardware. Hmm. And if you've got someone who's actually wanting to use an old bit of hardware, it's a good thing to start with. The downside of it is that apart from Ubuntu, which isn't too bad, and they are getting better at it, is the support of it can be a bit iffy sometimes, particularly with using particular devices. Sometimes some manufacturers are really good at providing drivers and others aren't, but it tends to be a bit fiddly in terms of getting it set up. I find that once it's set up and you've got everything working, it's great. As long as you run the update manager from time to time, which is the same sort of idea as Windows Update. But if you've got someone who can actually set it up for you, I think it's a viable option. And it does take a little bit of getting used to, but it's worth it because it's a lot easier. It tends to be a lot more lightweight, have a lot less requirements. So as you say, if you've got an old piece of kit, it can actually extend the lifetime of that hardware. Pete, certainly something to look at.
Pete in the chat room says he's got Mint running on an abacus to explain the lightweightedness of it. ScreenFlow is available on the latest Mac Heist, as there's some... so is no, it's not. And I've just checked the current QuickTime that's installed as default on your OS X Mavericks does do screen capture. So
yeah, and I've just found a solution for the question.
Ah.
Like, oh, using free software that comes in your Mac, assuming that you want to do it on a Mac.
Stick it in the chat room.
I'm going to have to talk you through it because I can't do it in the chat room. So basically, it's very quick. All you do is open the FaceTime app on your Mac. And what that does is, until you phone somebody, it gives you a preview of your webcam. Pop that down the bottom right-hand corner and minimize it as small as it can go. And then use the QuickTime player to do a screen record. I've tested it, and that does video the screen. So you can have Minecraft running in a window and then have your FaceTime thing sitting at the side of it. And that would give you picture-in-picture for free with all software that comes on your Mac.
I could see you using that for something entirely different.
Oh, no.
There you go, Joshua. Make sure, I'm not sure what faces you're going to be pulling while you're doing your Minecraft, mate, but make sure you send us a capture, eh? And we'll show it next week, or next time. Last question then before we finish up. How do I change the default profile on my Xbox, says Graham Wilson.
So this is a question that it's a workmate of mine asked me. And I wrote an article on it the other day, but I thought we'd just cover it here. So,
yep.
And I guess it's also a cover that this, questions that you're asking this show doesn't necessarily have to be relating to your PC. We're also kind of take technology questions relating to anything else, so wearables,
Xboxes, PlayStations, whatever you want. So what the scenario was here was that this gentleman had two Xboxes. One was his and one was kind of the family's. And he sold his one, brought his family's one up to use in his office, but it was default to the family profile every time. And he just kept on starting games, and the profile was running on the family one, and then he ended up having to sign out and sign back in as himself and so on and so forth. And so basically all you do is, if you just hit the Xbox button, make sure you're signed in as the profile that you want to be the default profile on your Xbox. Hit the Xbox button so the menu pops up. This is an Xbox 360, incidentally, not an Xbox One. Scroll across to the right by using the right shoulder button or just by pushing to the right. And in the very last panel, go into Profile Settings. And the option there is to make that profile the default profile. If you set that to yes and then reboot the Xbox, that profile will then be the default profile from that point onwards.
Excellent. Good news. There you go, Graham. Answers
provided. How long did it take Chiz to explain that to you, Paul?
Oh, that's a slap. Oh, man alive.
I'm not going to lie, I was almost for it.
Boom.
If you've got a question for us, send it to help@britishtechnetwork.com and we'll pick it up and we'll put it in the show notes and we'll read it out and we'll answer your question for you. I absolutely promise you, every question that comes in will get a reply. It's either going to be on the show and we'll read you out, or it's going to be via the blog, or we'll just simply send you an email back with the answer. But every single question that comes in, I always did this with the photo show, any questions that came in, we always replied to them, even if we didn't use them on the shows. So help@britishtechnetwork.com, and you can get your question answered. There we go. By our esteemed panel here on the left. Now, I've got to talk about Patreon. Don't roll your eyes and say, oh, God, they're just off for begging now. I'm not going to listen anymore. I want to say a huge thank you because the Patreon fund is currently sitting at $208 a month, which, based on the fact I've sent out about four tweets to get it started, and we've only had 3 days of being able to listen to the shows, is fantastic. Thank you ever so much, those people that have done it. What's the Patreon thing about? Well, we're not trying to pay our wages here, not at all. And we're not trying to buy Sam games either. What we're trying to do is just offset some of the cost. If you look at the sponsors that we've got UK2, they're fantastic. We love them to bits. They pick up all the bandwidth charges that we'd have. And, you know, the Mac show has between 30 and 40,000 downloads a week. We can't afford that kind of bandwidth. The server that we've got is £400 on its own per month. So we couldn't do that. UK2 take off that cost. And the Network Union pick up the cost of providing the broadband into the studio here to pick up the video shows. No one's getting anything for free, and we're not getting paid. You're not putting it in our pockets. We're not going to drink it at the bash or anything like that. What you're doing is saying, right, you're busking. The British Tech Network is a bunch of buskers. We sit there and we are churning out content, and you walk past and you stop and have a listen for a bit. You can either drop some money in the hat or you can walk on. Those people that want to stop and have a listen, we'd appreciate it if you dropped a bit in the hat. That's all it is. If you can only afford a dollar, that's fantastic. That's 60 pence a month for all the shows that we do. Great. Thank you very much. Fantastic shout out, please, to Chris and to Dave. They know where they are. They're sponsoring us $15 a month. Superb. Thank you very much. A lot of people are doing $5 and a couple of people are doing $10 as well. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever you can say, this is worth. Thank you very much for doing the shows, you, and here is, and put in the amount that you can afford each month. $5 is nothing more expensive than a beer or something like that. But that makes a huge difference, because what that means is, with the cumulative value of that, we can actually start to do stuff in the studio. We can get better lighting, we can get better microphones out to people, and we can make sure we keep the quality up on these things. And if we hit our milestones, then we get to the stage where we don't even actually do any advertising anymore. We are also paying for everyone to go down to EGX, is it? RGX? EGX.
EGX.
The gaming show. European Gaming Show. And we're gonna report live from there. Sam, yeah. Chiz and Paul are going to do live broadcasts from there. I'm going to be the cameraman and just follow them around and get drunk with them. There we go. But you won't be paying for us to get drunk.
We're not going
to
get drunk.
We're not going to get drunk. Now then, if you're a Patreon subscriber, then you probably subscribe to the Mac Show and to the Gamer Show, to the Gamer Show and to the Big Show.
Big Show.
You will know that there is an enormous bag of stuff, some swag. And here we go. This is my speaker bag from Macworld, which my wife won't let me keep because I've got too many bags as it is already. It's in great nick. It didn't get too much damage on the way home. And it's got absolutely shed loads of stuff in it. There is a Cirque du Mac T-shirt, which you can't get anywhere else. There is a whole pile of stuff from Square Jellyfish, which are great little camera supports. I wish I was keeping them for myself. There's loads of other things that are in here. There's about 300 quid's worth of stuff in this bag. And it's yours if you're a Patreon subscriber. We're going to do a draw. So after this month's Patreons have all gone through at the end of the month, then what we're going to do is do a draw from all those people who donated, and you could win this bag of goodies. Now, if you're sitting thinking, well, I don't get paid to the end of the month, and I want to do it in May, then don't worry, because in May we've got a fantastic giveaway from MacPaw. They're giving away two great pieces of software for three people, so there's six licenses of software worth a couple hundred quid going out. So there's going to be giveaways every month, but you're only going to be eligible for the giveaway if you're a Patreon subscriber. And here's how it works. If you donate $15, you get 15 entries in the draw. If you donate $10, you get 10 entries in the draw. And if you only donate $1, you only get one entry in the draw. Simple as that. So it's egalitarian, if you like, for everyone. But here you go. 300 quid's worth of Macworld goodies. Some of it is unique. You cannot get it anywhere else unless you were there, is yours. But all you have to be is a Patreon subscriber. Please, please, please support the network, because none of us get paid, and we just need some help offsetting the costs. That's all it is. It's not us trying to hold the hat out and try and drink all your money. Thank you very much, especially to those that have already donated, because it's already going towards good causes. There's new studio lighting coming up in here. What did you do? I didn't say anything funny, did I?
No, I just read in the chat there, Ewan needs more muller for Candy Crush to level up. It's all true.
You know that's moolah as well, not muller. Muller's a yogurt.
I said moolah.
Itinerant twat. Don't interrupt me again. there's no cool things or anything like that, because this is a help show. If you've got any questions, then send them to us, help@britishtechnetwork.com, and next time we do it, in 2 weeks' time, we'll answer those questions and we'll help you out, and the fantastic Assemble panel will be here. They're like a bunch of Antiques Roadshow people.
Really?
No. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Wheatley?
You can get me on Twitter at Paul Wheatley. You can get me on the Pocket Show on this fine network. And you can get me on the Gamer Show on this fine network, and occasionally on the Mac Show and the Big Show.
I have to say that that the last Pocket Show I thought was awesome.
Thank you. It was good fun.
Chris was great. It was I listened to it today, caught up with it, and I thought it was a cracking show, mate. Top to hole. If you don't listen to the Pocket Show, you bloody should, because it was great. Absolutely fantastic.
It's amazing what not working will do for my research.
Yeah, it's actually, there was some solid facts in there.
Yeah, quite yeah, I know that one, Paul. That show.
Sam, where are you, buddy?
I'm basically not anymore. You can mainly get me through Paul. Paul and the Gamer Show.
So you're not doing Dr. Nasty Flaps on Twitter anymore?
It exists, but do you know what? I'm just not. I can't take to quit Twitter. It just doesn't do it for me.
That's okay.
And I never look at it.
So you're a Facebook man as well.
Taste, Sam.
I do Facebook. In fact, yeah, we've got a Gamer Show Facebook, so anyone's welcome to pop on there and put some comments up, however insulting you want. Mainly directed at Chiz, though, please.
Mate, you know, I get abuse every week. You don't want to invite that kind of crap. Sarah, where are you, Mrs.?
Best place to get a hold of me is, apart from on the network, normally on the Big Show and occasionally on other shows, is at Sarah Jane UK on the Twitters.
Thanks, Gil. Excellent. Paul Shadwell, where are you, sir?
On Twitter, I'm Paul Shadwell. That's PaulShadwell. Also the same on Facebook. And you can also see my blog, which is shadwell.eu.
Excellent.
Have you changed your Twitter handle? I thought you were Slim Shadwell on Twitter.
That being a reference to the to the gangster rapper, Slim Chadwell. Righty, where are you, buddy?
Hello, mate. Paul's on Twitter, on The Big Show, on this fine network, and writing reviews at BritishTechNetwork.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Grand job you're doing as well. And you're hosting The Big Show tomorrow night.
Apparently so. Oh, God.
Good lad. You're fine. You'll be fine.
It'll be a laugh.
All it remains for me to say is, good pony!